I'm going to call to order a meeting for the Gover Beach City Council for Tuesday, July 5th, 2011. Would you all please stand with us for a moment of silence for a loved one that has recently passed? Thank you. We're going to do our flag salute, and we usually have a student lead us in the flag salute, but school is out. So, Councilmember Bright, will you lead us?
I'd be honored. Thank you. Please follow me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. Roll call.
Councilmember Bright. Here. Councilmember
Ballmer. Here.
Here.
Here. Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, can you cover our closed session announcements?
Certainly, Honorable Mayor, Council members, members of the public, on June 20th, 2011, the City Council, after reconvening into open session, made two announcements from the closed session items, one being the labor negotiations with all groups, the other one existing litigation, Listio versus City of Gover Beach versus Gover Beach Inn and Listio. I apologize. First item, there was no reportable action. On the second item, City Council approved the settlement in principle.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's move on to our agenda review. This is where the Council review the order of business as presented by staff. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda as presented?
No.
If none, I'll accept the motion.
I'll move that we accept the agenda as published.
I second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries, so we will proceed with the order of business as shown on the agenda. And I believe there's some extra copies in the back of the room. So let's move to our ceremonial calendar, and this is item number one on the agenda. This is a drawing to select monthly winners of the local economic stimulus program shop, local shop loyal. This is the last drawing for this program. The program is ending due to budget cuts, and however, the city would like to thank everyone for their participation, and thanks to all of you. The program was a terrific success. So with that, I hope you will still continue to shop at local businesses in Gover Beach. Anyway, so we're going to select, I believe, 10 winners, Kathy. Okay. I'm going to pass it down, and you want to pick a couple?
Sure.
Let's do that. Share the load.
Jim Wilson. Duke Sterling.
Duke. Debbie Peterson.
She's been busy.
Pretty lucky.
Nadia Anderson.
Wait. Yep, she's got another one here.
Candy Marr.
Okay. Great.
That's 10.
So the winners will get a $50 gift certificate to local businesses. So thanks, everyone, again, for participating. We really appreciate it. So then let's move on to item number two, and this is an announcement regarding San Luis Obispo County Community Project grant for automated external defibrillators, and I see in the audience Supervisor Adam Hill. So, Supervisor Hill, you have the podium.
Your Honor, Mr. Mayor, and Honorable Council, it's a pleasure to be here with you. This, and I think we have it actually in place. This came out of a conversation I was talking with Five Cities Fire Authority Chief Hubert and Battalion Chief Heath, and then talked with Mayor Scholes about how I might be able to spend some of my community funds on some really worthwhile projects, and I can't think of one that's more worthwhile than having one of these defibrillators here in City Hall. I know this is a goal of Chief Hubert and his fire professionals to put this in as many buildings as possible. And so when I talked to him about providing money for my community funds, I said, well, let's start with our City Hall here. Hopefully we'll see that throughout a lot of the public buildings in our South County area because they're such important life-saving devices. So maybe with your pleasure, Mr. Mayor, we could have Chief Hubert and Captain Huey come up and explain what's going on here, Chief.
Yeah.
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you, Supervisor.
Chief, you're going to give us a demonstration?
Are there any volunteers? As Supervisor Hill stated, it's been one of our goals to try to place AEDs in the public facilities around our communities. These are much great life-saving devices in the event someone has a sudden cardiac event. So with Supervisor Hill's generous appropriation of these funds, we were able to purchase one that will be housed in here in City Hall in the event, hopefully never needed, but if necessary, it will be here for its intended use. So we greatly appreciate his efforts. Thank you.
Can we do a photo with the
sure.
mayor?
Sure. I'll be right there.
Okay. That would be good. Get direction from the chief of police.
Very good.
I echo his.
There is an echo in here.
Sounds lots like. Of echoes.
Okay, let's move on to public communications. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, we cannot take action on any item that is not on the agenda. So if you are here to speak on an item that is actually on the agenda, I will give you ample time at that when that item comes up. So is there anyone that would like to address the Council on Public Communications? Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council Adam Hill again. I just wanted to mention a few other ways that that the county and the city is collaborating well. And, you know, I get to meet with Mayor Scholes and City Manager Peralt frequently so that we can go over some ways that I can. So this is one of the ways by working with Five City Fire Authority. Also with the mayor and the city manager have been able to put community funds towards the summer concert series with Kathy and Parks and Rec. Also work with the Chamber of Commerce to give money to the Stone Soup Music Fair. And also when talking with Mayor Scholes, also wanted to make sure that I was able to give money to our People's Kitchen that operates here in Grover as yeah. well. So I think it's, you know, in these difficult times when all of our budgets, especially the smaller cities, are really stretched, you know, it's really important for us to work together. So I'm always happy to work with the mayor, work with the council, and all of our leaders in our community, because this is a great community. So I just wanted to thank you, Mayor. Thank the city manager as well for his help. And we'll talk about some more ways that we can work together.
Sounds good. And again, okay. Thank you for all your hard work and good work.
Good evening, Brenda Auer. I live here in Grover Beach. And I wanted to thank everybody that came out to the beach this morning, helped clean up the trash before the tide came in. It's such an important thing. And I know that the people that were there on the beach that left their beer bottles and their cans and all the fireworks don't realize that once the tide comes in and takes it out. So I know there was a lot of people down there working this morning. I was there at 6:30, and I've been back this afternoon. The beach is nice and clean. So everybody that participated, thank you so much. I also want to just throw something out there. There's an item on the agenda later on that I'm not going to stay for, but you all know how I feel. and I don't want to see us shoot ourselves in the foot for potential income. And on that note, maybe there's something we could do next year for the 4th of July. All those hundreds of thousands of people that are down there on the beach, they're spending their money in Pismo and on fireworks, a carnival, the circus was in San Luis, something. T-shirts maybe where we don't need a vendor's license somewhere with 4th of July at, they want it to say Pismo, but we can put Grover on it. Just any kind of idea that we could come up with that to generate some more revenue. I think we have an opportunity there with the audience. Thanks, and again, thanks for all your help.
Thank you, Brenda. Is there anyone else that would like to address the council doing public communications? Okay.
Hi, I'd like to talk about the vacation rental regulations briefly, if I can.
Well, we're actually going to have a complete discussion on that. So if you could wait until we get to that item,
actually,
that would be
appropriate.
Actually,
I can't be here. I have to leave. Can I just make a 3-minute comment?
Well, if I
nice to see you all again tonight, and I appreciate you listening to us week after week. In the June 3rd article in the Tribune, sewage spill was likely preventable by Cynthia Lambert. Report by the South Sanitation County Sanitation District says two errors led to raw sewage escaping during December rains. And we all know that the rains came through. Because of a closed discharge valve, a pump was not able to push the raw sewage quickly enough through the plant. If it had, the probability of a sewage spill would have been very low, according to a report the district sent this week to the State Water Resources Control Board. This was a June 3rd article. And it says right here, Sanitation District Administrator John Wallace said Wednesday he believes the valve was inadvertently left closed after maintenance had taken place at the plant. Quote, I'm not sure how that happened, he said. The plant staff, quote, responded as quickly as they could through the sequence of events. Well, you know, there's a word here that I am hesitant to use. I used it at the AG City Council meeting last week, and the word is negligence. And the reality here is if this sewage spill was likely preventable because two valves that have now been, quotes, chained open, when the rain's coming down the pike and you see it on the news, and the plant administrators and the plant engineers and the plant staff is there, and you double check, you triple check, you go over that plant from top to bottom to make sure everything is up to snuff and ready to go for that, quotes, possible flooding event. So for something like this to happen, for me to hear the plant administrator, John Wallace, quote, I'm not sure how that happened, that gets to me. I don't see how that could even be possible. That's negligence. One of the things that I'm really incensed about this whole thing and that really bothers me is that if this sewage spill is fined at the level that it should be fined at, $10 a gallon, 345,000 gallons, that's over $3 million, who's going to pay that bill? Is that going to be John Wallace, or is that going to be our three cities? You know, I know my time's almost up. Y'all on the city councils, both Grover Beach and Aurora Grandy and Oceano CSD, you guys have a lot on your plates, and you do a great job on so many things. When you send a representative to the South Sanitation Sewer District meetings, we need a whole lot more help over there, and I sure hope that it's forthcoming. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good evening, Council. Brad Snook, Volunteer Coordinator for our county's chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. Two documents that help you understand why a financial and plant discharge quality-related investigation are necessary for our wastewater treatment plant. The grand jury findings, jobs with the district, chose to follow cultural expectations. The chief plant operator is still employed, though on leave, and Trenia Rodriguez, who refused to speak to investigators was mentioned in the NOV, recently got a promotion. Well, it's obvious that change is necessary. Your representative and Mayor Ferrara have been slow to address the need for change. Over the years, they've had their chance to fix the conflict of interest, but they haven't. Mayor Ferrara says they haven't because it works. And with the investigation we're requesting, there's a chance for them to prove that it works. However, that investigation is unlikely to happen with both your representative and Mayor Ferrara on the board of directors. Or even if it does happen with them on the board, the investigation's conclusions will be questioned because of their involvement in design and implementation of the investigation. Both your director and Mayor Ferrara have entrusted Mr. Wallace to advise them on all the specifics of the NOVs, and the two directors have been very defensive about the grand jury findings. The grand jury findings reflect poorly on them. So, limited information has been reaching stakeholder city councils in Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande. We believe Oceano, even with their new representative, Loriangelo, will continue to support change at the district, starting with an investigation of potential malfeasances by the Wallace Group. They have added a discussion about the sanitation district to their July 13th agenda. Question for you. Is it this board's expectation that your representative continue to support the logical conflict of interest of the Wallace Group and their subsequent roles as plant administrator, chief engineer, and contractor at the plant? Can you discuss making a vote of confidence during your July 18th meeting on whether your representative has adequately addressed the conflict of interest at the plant?
Great. Thank you, Mr. Sun.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to address the council during public communication? Okay, seeing that, I'm going to close public communication, bring it back to the council. And at this moment, we have a public hearing item, which is number 3, weed abatement. But let me poll the audience really quickly. Who is here for the vacation rental regulations item?
No.
Okay. So with the indulgence of my colleagues, what I'd like to do is I think item number 3 will more than likely go fairly swiftly, and then we will take item number 9 after that because it is a public hearing item. I don't want to move it too far down. Okay. So let's do item 3, and then we will go to item number 9. So this is 2011 weed abatement cost protest hearing. Fire Chief Hubert and Battalion Chief Heath.
Their properties was on June 15th. A reinspection of the lots in violation was done on June 16th. A second copy of the public hearing notice was mailed to the remaining owners on the list. The weed abatement contractor abated the lots listed in violation through June 18th through the 25th. Another public hearing notice was published in the Tribune on Friday, June 24th, regarding the cost protest hearing, which is tonight. Property owners have this opportunity to protest the cost of the abatement conducted on their properties. City Council can approve the list of properties to have the abatement costs attached to the specific owner's property tax bill. There is an attachment Exhibit A, which is a list of assessments that will be attached to the specific properties, and that list has now dwindled down to 6, maybe even 4, depending on if I believe 2 people have possibly come in and paid.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Great. Any questions of Battalion Chief Heath?
No.
No? Okay. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, sir.
This is a public hearing item, so I'm going to open this up to the public. Is there anyone that would like to address this item? I see movement.
Hello, everybody. Arnold Dowdy, 925 South 16th, and I'm not here to protest at all. What I'm here to remind you is that you have street right-of-way at the corner of my property that is in dire need of having the weed abatement done. You've usually done it earlier in the year, generally by May. I was very concerned over the 4th of July holiday because it's about 3 feet high.
What corner is that, Arnie?
It's at the corner of 16th and Huntington.
I just wanted to get it in the record. Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one coming forward, I'm going to close this to the public, bring it back to the council. And if there's no additional discussion, anyone want to have some discussion on this item? If not, is someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll make a motion.
Hang on a second. Oh. City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. I would recommend that the motion provide some flexibility to staff with regard to the actual list of properties. It appears that at least two of those have already been satisfied. So I would recommend that we add language into the resolution, into the whereas, and into the second whereas, actually. So it reads as follows. Whereas this time and place fixed for the hearing and report five cities fire authority regarding the cost abatement of weeds and rubbishes and rubbish on various lots and parcels of land within the city for the year 2011, as set forth in Exhibit A attached hereto and in parentheses, simply indicate that some properties may
discussed exempting properties that may have already paid their fee.
Very good, as part of the resolution.
Okay. I'll second that motion.
There's a motion and a second. Is there any additional discussion? Okay, if there's no more discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, let's move on to item number 9. And this is Vacation Rental Regulations, Community Development Director Buckingham.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. Just a brief background. In March, the council conducted a public hearing to consider proposed regulations for vacation rentals, and the council directed staff to revise the ordinance as follows: create a vacation rental overlay area that would allow vacation rentals west of 4th Street, include a grandfather clause for existing vacation rentals, and revise a draft ordinance to strengthen the ordinance. After incorporating the proposed changes, staff thought it would be prudent to request council direction or confirmation prior to scheduling the public hearing and to consider adoption. So again, there's no action to be taken tonight. We're just looking for a consensus in the council. I think first and foremost, the item that we really wanted just to bring back to you to make sure that we got it right was the vacation overlay area. So as a result of revising the area, we now are in a proposed area that would affect less than 1,000 properties in the city, and it now requires us to send public notices out to all the people that live in that area, as well as people within 300 feet. So staff wanted to make sure the overlay is consistent with the council comments that we received at the last meeting, and I just really wanted to walk you through that to show you on the zoning map what areas that affects and which ones we excluded.
Okay.
So just starting at the north part of the city and the west side of 4th Street, we have a small section of the CPR 1 zone up here that has a few lots. As we move down, we have a very small C coastal R3 zone. Of all the areas, this is the only R3 zone in the entire overlay area. The CR2 here, the CR1, there's actually a portion of the R1 that is not in the coastal zone. And then moving down, we have, of course, the visitor-serving commercial along Grand Avenue. And then on the west side of Highway 1, we included the LeSage Mobile Home Park. It's zoned commercial, but as we all know, it's legal nonconforming with nothing but residential uses. But then we excluded the obvious, the golf course, and then we did exclude as well, consistent with the current zoning of the CPC zoning, to not allow vacation rentals, the proposed lodge site, and the properties on Highway 1. So the pink areas, then, I just wanted to remind the council, these are these two industrial areas, the CIC, and then this little section of the CI. These were changed as part of the land use element update. We're in the process right now of changing them to commercial zones. So they won't be part of the initial overlay, but as soon as the council changes the zone technically to commercial, then they would be a part of the overlay. We'd go back and amend the map. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. You know, one thing, this is, it does affect the coastal zone, so ultimately the ordinance adoption by the council were required to go to the Coastal Commission. In general, they're very supportive of coastal of vacation rentals, because it is another form of lodging in the coastal zone. And this overlay happens to affect almost the entire coastal zone, commercial, residential in the city. The only exceptions are there is a small CR2 finger that kind of runs between 4th and 5th here. And then there's a couple of coastal R1 lots down there in that little residential tract north of Highland. So, but for the most part, the point is that it includes the majority of the coastal zone, and staff believes that that would be consistent with the Coastal Commission's intent of having vacation rentals in the coastal zone. The next issue that the council wanted us to go back and do some research, mm-hmm. and come back with some recommendations was legal nonconforming status. And again, as we've talked about, the city has never formally legalized or adopted regulations for vacation rentals. However, since 2005, we have collected transient occupancy tax, or TOT, from several properties. Again, for about the last 5 or 6 years is when that started. So the city currently allows what we call legal nonconforming uses to continue to operate until the use is abandoned, and that's a one-year time frame. So the typical example, a used car lot is a nonconforming use. Once it's abandoned or not operating over 1 year, then it ceases to exist, and they lose that ability to reestablish the nonconforming use. So we went back, we looked at using that time frame of 1 year, we went back and we determined that there's only 7 properties in the city that have submitted transient occupancy tax since July 1st, 2010. And 4 of those properties happen to be within the overlay, proposed overlay area, and 3 are outside of that overlay. That's not to say that it's likely that there have been other vacation rentals that have been operating in the city, but at this point, the only thing that staff has to verify their legitimate use is the payment of TOT. So staff's recommending that only the properties that have paid TOT since July 1st, 2010 be recognized as legitimate vacation rentals. And again, based on the current overlay, proposed overlay, there's only 3. So the council has a range of options in considering how long to allow the continued use of these. It ranges from you could cease operations from the date you adopt the ordinance to setting a specific time frame. We'll let them operate 1, 2, 3 years after the ordinance is adopted. Or you can allow them, consistent with the way the code is right now, you could allow them to operate indefinitely until such time the use is abandoned. 1 year is currently stated. So, somebody rents a vacation rental every 3 months in the summer, that constitutes that they've been operating legally within that year. We'd allow them to continue to operate. So staff is recommending that latter approach, that we would allow them to continue to operate until such time they were abandoned or ceased operations or paying TOT for 1 year. But in this case, the 3 that we're talking about, they would have to go through this vacation rental permit process. I think we said within the first 60 days they have to come in get the permit, and therefore they would have to operate and abide under all the regulations that are proposed. Couple more things, the issue of property management companies, whether that should be a requirement or not. Staff did go back, review state law. The definition of a property manager, it really is just, if you get a real estate broker's license, then you can qualify as a property manager, but there is no designation by the state per se that you are a property manager. So staff's not advising that the ordinance require property management manager be responsible. We would just point out that the whole point of these regulations is we're mandating that vacation rentals are properly managed, whether they're licensed or not. We just want to make sure they're properly managed, and we think as written that would do that. And then lastly, strengthen the regulations. I think there was consensus on that. We did increase the rolling violation period from 12 months to 24 months. So if today you had a violation, that kind of starts a clock of 24 months, which is a longer period of time, and you could have one every 10 months, but that would still be, in this case now, three, and we did reduce that from four to three. So three violations in any 24-month period would trigger a revocation hearing. And again, I'd point out that we did provide language in there that if for any reason we thought there was some egregious violation going on, is the director, I could bring that forward as a revocation. It doesn't necessarily take three violations, if you will. So we also included in the draft revision that we gave you to make sure we would post all conditions of the vacation rental, you know, in a visible location. And so we included maximum number of guests, vehicles, so that all that information would be available and visible for, to the public. And lastly, we added the requirement that the properties be kept in a neat and clean condition. So in conclusion, staff's recommending the council provide us direction, but in particular, probably most on that overlay area and whether we believe it's, whether you believe it's the correct one, and to go ahead then and schedule a public hearing for September. And one more thing to add why the overlay area is maybe so important is that back to that noticing, if ultimately we get to the public hearing and the council wants to reduce the area, no problem. The only issue comes up is if as part of the public hearing process the council decides they want to expand the area, now we'd actually have to go back and re-notice and come back for another public hearing. So that concludes staff's report.
Okay, so just for clarification, staff is seeking direction, and then we will set a public hearing to where there could be a formal action, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So is this kind of your way of saying, is this really what you guys meant?
Confirmation might be, yes.
Okay, very good. Actually, a nice staff report, and we really appreciate you going back over the direction that was given and then coming back. It's pretty clear. It's pretty clean, so we can really see what direction had been given and their following research. So I want to give you a kudos on the staff report. So let's see if there's any questions of staff. Councilmember Monar, let me start at my left.
Just out of curiosity, do you happen to know how long the time will be for the Coastal Commission to come up with an approval?
I suspect they will consider this a minor amendment, in which case it only takes them 60 days to act.
So then it would be 30 days after that. Is that what you have in here?
It's the latter, which is always the Coastal Commission. So you'd have your second reading, and we would wait 30 days. We'll send the application, and then that would be another 60 days on top of that.
Okay, 60 days. All right. The language you have in here concerning the definition of illegal nonconforming, I just wonder if that should be clarified just so someone can't come along and say that, you know, there has been a vacation rental that's been going on for a while, and if they haven't been paying their TOT, I guess I want to make sure then that we're just talking about the seven that are listed, and that someone can't come along and suddenly come in and say, I want to pay my TOT so I can be grandfathered in.
And in essence, we'd be acknowledging, based on these parameters, that if adopted as is, there's only these three, and only staff would allow a vacation rental permit to be issued for those three.
Okay. What about the sale of a property that would be grandfathered in? And then it talks about the continued use. If it's abandoned after a year, then it no longer qualifies. What if the property is sold?
We would require that they apply for a new vacation rental permit, but this does run with the land, so to speak. So during that year, if I sell the property, as long as I come in and there hasn't been a one-year lapse, no matter what the ownership is, you would still be allowed to operate.
Okay. And so what happens to, because I didn't notice, I'm not sure if I saw the language concerning illegal vacation rentals. What happens if somebody calls and says, I have one next door to me who is not, have a permit?
As soon as the ordinance is adopted and finalized, approved by the Coastal Commission, any complaint at that point, we know either you're in the overlay area and you come and get your vacation rental permit, or you're, in this case, one of these three that would be grandfathered in. Everybody else is illegally operating, and again, we tried to put some regulations in here, like the requirement to post the permit number on there, so it would be very easy to go online and determine if someone is operating without a permit.
And if they are operating without a permit?
Do
they get the written notice and then the fine? Is it the same as the violations?
If they are illegally operating and they cannot operate, you know, they're not even in the eligible because they're not in the overlay zone, we start a code enforcement proceeding and immediately stop the action. And, okay. And our city attorney could explain more of the details of that if you're interested.
Okay, I just wanted to make that clear because I didn't see that here. And I don't know if that's being redundant or if it's not in there, does it have teeth?
Yes, the answer is yes.
Short answer is yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Councilmember Bright.
If you wouldn't mind clarifying something for me in Attachment 1, it's Item B, effective date of vacation rental permits. I read it, and it still doesn't look like one's any different than the other. Can you help me with that?
I think the only difference is the 60 days.
Yeah. If you're operating currently, if you're one of these seven that are operating legally, we're just telling you that we had to put a trigger in there when to come in. So we said within 60 days. After that, anybody who just wants to come in and apply, that's all that's saying, is you do need to apply for a vacation rental permit if you're not one of those seven and it's after the fact.
Okay. And so if you're in that, let's say we approve the overlay, you're in that area, you're to get a permit prior to starting. Okay. And if they don't, then what? They are required to?
Right. So if someone's operating now a vacation rental where they are allowed to, but they don't have a permit, then, again, it's basically a code enforcement situation. But we're telling them now, just come in and get the permit. And so, again, if they don't get the permit, we'll shut them down. And
okay. All right. Okay. That was my question. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
You know, the only question I have is you say that property managers, the only thing they have to have is a real estate license. There are designations within that industry. I know there are quite a few of them. I don't know what it does for the individual or what the requirements are for the different categories that they can get. Did you look into that at all?
I think actually it is a broker's license that carries the ability to call yourself a property manager, not an agent's license.
I understand that that's the basic requirement. My question is, I know that there are designations within that industry that people can get, such as you may get a college degree, but you can go on and get a master's degree, or you can go on and get a PhD. And I'm wondering what there are designations within the property management field, and I'm not sure what they stand for, and I'm wondering if you looked into that at all.
Well, first of all, I would say it's true. Anybody who is a licensed real estate broker is going to have more background and be more familiar just with real estate law to begin with. I didn't find that there was an actual designation, but I do believe if you are a broker, whether it's continuing education or where you choose to get credits, you can get more study, if you will, in property management than maybe some other aspect of real estate. But I did not find that you actually end up with a designation per se. And we'd be happy to, you know, look into that
okay,
more.
I think it's something we might want to look into. It doesn't necessarily have any bearing on this particular ordinance that we're talking about right now. But being involved in homeowner associations, I know that when they talk about being a property manager and we'd like to manage your association, they tell me about all of the designations they have as qualifies them to be a property manager. So I'm just wondering what those are. That's all I have.
That's all? Okay. I have comments, and I know that people have been waiting patiently. So what I want to do is, this is a business item, but I am going to open this up to the public. Just for clarification, the council can't take any formal action this evening. We will try and provide staff with some direction, so we welcome your comments. So let me open this up. Is there anyone that would like to address this item before the council this evening? Please come forward and state your name and city of residence for the record. So please come forward.
Hi, Nathan Spooner. I live in Grover Beach. Near six in Newport. And I was one of the persons that complained originally about the neighbor, our neighbor who was the vacation rentals, who were different people there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom and I, we tried to approach them. They were very rude. We really, we appreciate what the city's doing on this, and I hope you make the right choices on this. I missed some of the meetings. I just want to tell a quick little story.
Okay.
Years ago in Washington, there was a person who lived, and he would come in from Washington in a helicopter to his house. And the neighbor complained about it. The neighbor said the helicopter was coming at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was too loud and everything. And nothing ever happened about it. Finally, they went to court, and the judge said, well, convince me that it's really that loud and that it's a nuisance. So the plaintiff brought out a boombox, turned it on. He had recorded the helicopter coming in. Got louder and louder and louder and louder. Pretty soon the judge says, that's enough. And the plaintiff says, the helicopter hasn't even landed, Your Honor. You've heard enough. Well, we've had enough of our unruly visitors, you know, distracting things in our neighborhood, and we really want the city to do the right thing, and I think you're on the right direction with this. And I've talked personally to people that have kept us awake till 2 o'clock in the morning. They've been very rude to us, you know, and I really think it's not appropriate for people to be able to just rent their house out for the weekend and have people come and fill up the streets with cars and party all night. And I really appreciate what you're doing with this, and I hope you... Well, in September, I'll try to come back and make further comments. So I appreciate what you're doing. But if you haven't had to live next to people who have done this, you haven't really experienced it. And I hope you never have to. And so far, it's been very, the city has taken some action, so it's had an effect, and I really appreciate it. And I know it does generate, and you know, we love this city. We love this part of town. Any kind of revenue that gets generated is to our benefit. But there's also, you know, the negative side of the other things that happen. So that's all I wanted to say. And thank you for the research on this.
Thank you, Mrs. Spoon.
What was your address, sir?
449 North 6th. Just around the corner from the one we were complaining about.
Great. Thank you, Mrs. Spooner.
My name is Tricia Witt, 341 North 14th Street, Grover Beach. I believe that the vacation rental across the street for me is one of the main instigators of this whole hearing that's been going on for the last 2.5-3 years. And I'm still not quite sure, even after phone calls today, if the vacation rental across the street from me at 334 North 14th Street is going to be potentially grandfathered in. There are renters there this week. They're probably going to be there for some time. One of the residence of that vacation rental is the individual who was caught going through a neighbor's trash can, waste bin, trying to gain access to their backyard. I've explained all this to you before. So the problem isn't going to go away if this particular resident is grandfathered in. It will make no sense to any of us on our block why our home values are going to be decreased and everybody else in the city, because of the overlay, may potentially, you know, have free access to their street without vacation renters. So I really like to understand who directed a grandfather clause. I don't remember that at the last hearing. I remember one being suggested by Council Member Nichols as to whether a grandfather clause could be placed in that. So I'm still confused as to what's going to happen with the vacation rental on our street.
Okay. Well, I will tell you that no formal regulations have been adopted, so that was suggested. So it's still a matter of debate and a decision. So I've documented your concerns, and I think staff, if you have a chance to find out if, in fact, that is one of the rentals that has paid TOT, maybe you can let Ms. Witt know.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone else?
I'm Kay Rusin. I live at 120 Anita Avenue. And we have a problem with one particular person buying up properties in our senior community and renting them out on a very short-term basis. One of my questions is, because I got from you that that's going to be a no-no, how do we document this? What procedure should we use to document this illegal use? The other thing I'm concerned about is it says 30 days for lodging and sleeping purposes. This person rents out, I know one particular instance, to a person for 5 weeks. I've owned rental properties, and to me, to have a real rental property, I want it to be a minimum of 6 months, preferably at least a year. This 30 days seems very, very short period of time. The other thing that concerns me is the fines. I don't think the fines are big enough, because if they're renting it out like a vacation rental, they're making lots of money. I mean, they can afford $250. And also the 24-month period, I think that's giving them a lot of leeway from what I've seen in our neighborhood. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Rusin, and staff is taking copious notes, and when we finish comment, if there are questions, we'll try and get some answers.
Good evening. I am Anita Schauer, 867 North 6th Street. The city cannot override any CCNRs. You've heard me say this before. Track 123 Grover City Heights encompasses front, first, second, third, fifth, and sixth streets. I don't have that with me tonight, and I don't remember what it says exactly, but I would caution staff to get a hold of the CCNRs for track 123 and see if vacation rentals are even allowed in that track. Every development in the city is supposed to have CCNRs, so I can't speak about the other developments, but I can speak about track 123. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Showers. Is there anyone else? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to close this.
I have one more question. My name's Tom. I had one more question to Bruce about what can actually be, what is the fine for people that are doing it illegally? And it's been
so, Tom, why don't you address the council?
I want to know how much are they going to get fined, or what are they going to do? It's really not clear. I'm not catching this. I'm saying, okay, the people that do not have a license, and they continue to do it. And then you are aware of the ones that are doing it. What kind of justice do you do there? I mean, apparently not very much is what I'm asking. The $100 ain't going to cut it if they're renting their rental homes for $1,200. I mean, that's not going to bother them, you know, at all. It's still going to bother the people that live next door to them. And when that you're talking about the grandfather lease. Now, I understand that as this thing is passed or whatever, like you're saying, right? The ones that have been signed up now are the ones are going to be grandfathered. Am I correct?
That is what is being suggested. That is not what the council has decided.
This is what is going on now.
Well, that's what's being recommended or suggested. So I just want everyone to be clear that this is staff has presented information. We had given them direction previously. They've come back with that information, and so once we give them additional direction, we will set a public hearing, and there will be an official action taken at that time. So a grandfather clause may be in, and it may not be in.
Okay.
So
can the ones that have been running illegally now within this time frame that we have here, because if he starts this, your overlay here is west of 4th Street. Am I correct? Is that what?
That's what's being suggested.
Okay, so the neighborhoods like in 4th, 5th, and 6th, and Newport, and those there. Now, that's in the rental area. Is that correct?
As proposed. Not approved.
Trying to put all this thing here together.
So, Tom, why don't you... why don't you finish your comments? Because what I'd like to do is close it, and then I have written down quite a bit and see if I can't get some clarity from staff, and then the council will have some additional discussion.
Well, I would appreciate that because there's still a little bit of loophole.
I understand. I know it's always tough when items are brought to us and we are giving direction and not taking a formal action at the meeting. Uh-huh.
Good evening. My name's Janine Carter. I live at 571 Newport, next to 555 Newport, which is the vacation rental we've been complaining about. I just had two more incidents that happened between the time that we were here last at the city council meeting, so I wanted to bring that to the attention. And I did have to call the police because of this disturbance. I don't have my exact date, but it was sometime after May 18th because I was home a lot after having some surgery. So I was trying to watch TV, and it was a Sunday. I ended up just putting up with the noise that was right next to our house. It was constant outbursts about every hour to 2 hours until 9 o'clock that night. And I finally called the police and said, I don't know what's going on. I think somebody's hurting somebody. I don't really know. And the police did come, which was wonderful. Two policemen, two cars came, and after they spoke to the tenants, we found out, he came and told us that it had been rented to 2 weeks in a row. 1 week, a van full of, these were vans full of mentally unstable people who were going on a field trip. I don't know where they were from, who they were. I don't know who was with them. I don't know anything about who was there. I know that it was loud. I know that I saw the man outside. I have nothing against mentally unstable people, as long as they're with someone that can control them. Apparently, he was without someone that could control him because the lady that was supposed to control him said he's not controllable, and the more you talk to him about loud behavior, the more he gets louder. So I, before I called the police, I called the owner because I have her phone number, Lisa Gilardarchi, and she lives in Fresno, I believe, or Bakersfield, one of those places in, are you?
No. Help,
oh, okay.
Please.
I'm sorry. I might have messed up her last name. I'm sorry.
Okay.
At any rate, I called her and I said, what were you thinking, renting to people that are mentally unstable? And we know they're mentally unstable. And she said, well, on Saturdays, noise can happen because people are partying. And I said, this is not a party. This is somebody that's using loud language, and it's scaring me. And she hung up on me. And that was the last time I heard from her. They have since been to their own vacation rental to stay. She did not come and talk to me. She did not apologize. She did not explain. But I know that anything goes now. Anything goes. And I will be here every time you have a meeting. I may not have hair, and I may look a little peaked because I'm going through chemotherapy now. And that's, I'm not trying to make you feel sorry for me. I'm just really tired of it, and I need my rest. And this is not helping it. It really isn't. This week, we happen to have some really, really nice people staying with next door to us. They're quiet. If we could have them year-round, I would be. She even said how pretty my yard was to me, one of the ladies. And we were here last city council receiving an award for our beautiful yard that we've worked on and spent thousands and thousands of dollars to have it pretty so we can live there. So I just want you to know that I appreciate all the work you're doing, and I appreciate all the work you're doing too. Over here, I forgot your name. I'm sorry. Bruce. So just keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Carter. Okay, seeing no one else come forward, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. So staff, there was a question regarding what procedures are going to be used to document illegal use. So maybe you can talk about that and just slightly touch on the, I know you talked about code enforcement. And then also, is there a definition for short-term rental? I think someone had talked about 30 days is too short and looking at something longer. Also, there was a question regarding fines, and I know that's a recommendation, so at the end of the day, the council will approve whatever fines they feel are appropriate. So I think we can say that's something that will be approved by the council. And then I think Tommy could have asked that. So why don't you, and if there's any others that you had written down, let's see if we can go through some of that.
Well, I think primarily the 30-day period is, I believe that is established by state law. It is the difference from defining a transient, somebody that has a temporary occupancy, versus someone that is in a 30-day or longer stay. So in that case, we have just mirrored what we believe is state code, and in all of the vacation rental ordinances we looked at, that was consistently the date provided. So unless our city attorney wants to add to that.
I think we are limited to regulating rentals in that period of time. Anything over 30 days, we would be infringing upon a month-to-month regular rental agreement, for example.
Okay. And actually, I'd like to defer to the city attorney and have him just to kind of discuss our code enforcement process in general. Whether it's a vacation rental violation or anything, they're all treated the same.
Yeah, I would agree.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. I think a couple of distinctions. First of all, one area of enforcement would be those who are permitted and are simply violating the rules. That's a distinguish from those who are not permitted and simply operating illegally. Those who are permitted, I think, what is being proposed is obviously a notification and correction and certain amount of violations when the period of time, I think, originally was proposed to be 12 months. I think the council talked about stretching it to 24 months. Again, that item is open. Would result in a revocation hearing, simply bringing the permit and revoking the permit and seizing their operation. With those who are not in basically operating without a permit, outside of the permitted zone, code enforcement obviously initiates with a notice of violation, fines, and moves forward to a legal action that would seek injunctive relief, stopping them from operating. But generally speaking, we obtain compliance prior to that.
Okay. Bruce, do you have anything else?
I think because the last two regarding fines and the time period is council discretion, I think that answered them all.
Okay. And someone had brought up the question of The you said there are seven that apparently have paid TOT.
Yes.
So what would we do with, if we are heading in this direction, for those who were not, they decide to rush in here and pay fees and then become grandfathered in? I think that was a concern raised.
I think that's in part to the council discretion. I mean, we use July 1st. It's been about a year. The intent is not to have people all of a sudden go out there and reestablish them now. So if the city attorney agrees, I mean, we would be looking, you know, we haven't had TOT results for May and June yet. So you could select any 12-month period, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. So we could, in fact, establish a date in which they had been recognized as a legitimate rental because they had paid TOT. You could freeze that in time. Is that correct?
That is correct. You can also simply just list them and make sure that you have sufficient notifications so somebody who feels they should have been listed wasn't can certainly come forward and prove us otherwise. But I think records are pretty well kept, and those who have paid within the last year are those two that we are aware of. And I think the other question was pertaining to the whether or not the use that is gave rise to some of the initial complaints, whether that use has made payments of the TOT, and I don't know the answer to that. Do you know, Bruce?
Yeah, the reason that we didn't provide addresses is that under state law, because it's a tax, we can't openly talk about the addresses. I can tell you that I don't think it's a violation that 334 North 14th Street has not paid TOT in over a year, so they would not be one that we would be considering grandfathering in.
Okay.
I guess along the same way, we have not received any TOT in the last year from 555 Newport either, so the okay. TOT issue would not be on the list of the three that would be grandfathered in based on the proposed overlay.
Great. Councilmember Wright, I thought you might have had a question.
Sorry. Well, there was a concern about any existing CC&Rs. Is that something that we need to be looking at?
City Attorney.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, Council Members, I think staff will double check. I think the adoption would not necessarily preclude the council from adopting the ordinance, but it could create a situation where something that is permitted by the city isn't permitted within the association, and if that's avoidable, the council will certainly be presented with that option.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Anything else? No.
I have comments. That was just my only other question.
Okay. Did you have any questions for us?
I have a question.
Okay.
Of the known vacation rentals that have paid their TOT, have there been any complaints concerning them that you're aware of?
City Attorney?
Thank you. I try to jump in. The distinction being drawn, it really, the locations that are paying TOT should not really be disclosed to those that aren't. And there are a lot of locations
okay.
that aren't paying TOT.
So
but the answer was, the question was different than I anticipated. I am not aware of any complaints to those locations.
I did not check with the police chief, but I am certainly not aware of any problems.
All
but
right.
we'll go back and double check.
Well, I wasn't asking for addresses. I was just curious.
Understand.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So, Karen, you had comments?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm going to start then. Well, I do appreciate all the work that you've done. And I look forward to getting the additional information that'll help us, I think, to go forward. I do have some concerns with the three violations in a 24-month period, and then there's a possibility that their permit can be revoked. I think that that's too many. I think that's too disruptive to a neighborhood, particularly if you're going to impose this overlay. So we have pretty much just a carte blanche. Anyone who lives in that area can now start operating, you know, a vacation rental. And so anyway, that is a concern of mine. So I'll leave it at that. What was my other? Oh, the fines are too small. I think, you know, if we're going to fine them, we should make it we should make it be worth fining, okay. Be worth our time and trouble. But then also, if we have three fines or three infractions and you get a fine, then you're going to have a possibility of having your permit revoked. However, I still believe that, that the fines need to be, they need to hurt a bit so that it doesn't continue. I think that's it. Those are my concerns.
Okay. Councilmember Monar.
Yes. I remember we had the discussion in between the 12 months and the 24 months, just as Councilmember Bright said. I don't understand. Initially, it was mentioned it would be for 12 months, and we had said we would change it to 24.
Yeah.
What was the purpose of that now?
A city attorney.
I think that suggestion was brought forth from the council as a greater length of a period to basically measure performance of a given location. One of the things that, as Community Development Director pointed out, he would carry discretion under that ordinance in the event that a violation is sufficiently egregious to simply initiate the process of revocation after the first violation, if it was serious enough. I think that a discretion definitely lies with the council, whether you wish to impose something that is within a 12-month period or something that's within a 24-month period, as well as the number of violations that would, per ordinance, trigger an automatic revocation process. Recognizing that a revocation process is probably a two-month process with an evidentiary hearing and other related issues.
Okay.
I also agree that the fines are not stiff enough, especially for illegal use, because it's true. I actually myself have used vacation rentals when I've gone places. And, you know, they're cheaper than hotels, but a lot of times you're paying a lot of money for a week. And if you're just going to be having a small fine, they're going to say, so what? Because that's just a small portion of what they're making. So I believe that we should increase the fines for illegal use, most definitely. Also, where we have done here, and I know we're just going by what's already common for us, is the abandonment. I believe that should be changed to 6 months, not a year. Because if somebody, you know, some vacation rentals, they don't rent them all the time, and they might not rent it for, like you said, for almost a year, and then suddenly rent it. And if they're in the business of doing that, then they should be renting them all the time. So casual use, I think, should be discouraged if this is going to be a business proposition. So I really think that should be changed to 6 months for abandonment.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
I think this is a rather difficult situation. It's going to take a lot more work on behalf of all of us. I certainly don't disagree with my cohorts insofar as the violations. Should be more restrictive. 3 and 24 months, I think, is going a little bit far. I think we can tighten up on that. I think the fines need to be looked at, probably increased for the most part. But I also have to keep in the back of my mind that I don't want Grover Beach to become a community where everybody starts to talk about how bad it is and stay away from Grover Beach, because everything you do in Grover Beach, they got a fine for you. They got a code enforcement officer running around nailing everybody for every little thing they do. I don't want it to become that type of a community. I think if we have adequate regulations and we have adequate code enforcement, I think we can do a very good job. But I think it's going to take a lot more work on our part than where we're at the present time.
Very good. Those are all really good comments, and I agree with you all. And knowing that we're trying to give some staff some direction on this, and that we're going to actually have a hearing that we will formally adopt these items. So what I'm hoping that we can do is, I had written five things down, and the first one was the vacation rental overlay boundaries that staff had talked about. The first question that we need to decide is, are these boundaries consistent with the direction that was given? Do we believe there needs to be a change? And I was reading the report, I did go back and realize that the Planning Commission had recommended that we consider vacation rentals in commercial zones, and I don't think we ever really had discussed that. And then tonight, I see staff had talked about the C, looks like this, the R2, the, or the coastal R2 along 4th Street. So the question that I have of you all is, do we believe that these are the boundaries that we would like to have considered, or do we want to consider expanding the boundaries? I know a question has come up with CCNRs in regards to the Bagwell Tract. I don't know if that necessarily, that obviously may affect those boundaries, so what's everyone thinking on that?
Well, if I may speak up, I think the boundaries are fine. I like them where they're at. I think we need to keep it west of 4th Street. I like the boundaries as they are established right now,
okay,
with a little more work that we're going to have to do, as brought up by Ms. Showers.
Okay. Is there a consensus on that, given that direction? Okay. So then the question of nonconforming uses, I think we've pretty much got some clarification on that, is that there are 7 properties, looks like 4 within the boundaries as shown on this map, 3 that are outside. So by being able to recognize them today means those are the ones that would be considered for a grandfather clause should the council go that direction. So is everyone okay with that, or
are we, I guess we can date? I mean, like today or July 1st, or
I think when the time comes we should probably specify a date, I would think. I don't think we can really make that decision tonight.
I think you have a couple of options. Setting a specific date without a parameter, for example, if you said today's date or July 1st as the date, if somebody in theory has not operated or has operated a use and came in on the 30th of June and paid for 1 month, is that a use that you want to grandfather in? And that's a question that you should probably think about.
Okay.
I think that the other option is to simply say, you know, consistent use over the last 12 months, a singular payment over the last 12 months. Is, again, but you're running into the same risk. It could be somebody who came in last minute and made the payment, and it could be somebody who, you know, the city hasn't been aware of. So those are the issues. We would probably, if the direction is given to consider a grandfather clause, we could bring in an ordinance, unless you have direction clear to it for us today, that would give you potentially a two-way street. In other words, you could either say has paid TOT 6 out of the last 12 months or has paid TOT within the last 12 months. Or if you wish, we can specify a date.
Well, I just think if they've paid, that's my opinion, if they've paid and paid on time, I mean, it's collected every month. So, I mean, if someone comes in June and pays for their TOT for the past year, that really isn't really in the what we're looking for, I mean, okay, personally.
Phyllis?
Well, actually, I like the fact that they did put in July 1st of 2010, because that's July starts our fiscal year, and that would make it a year up till now, and that would take care of that problem. So I
the back date, yep.
I think that is actually a good suggestion that the staff made to make it go retroactive. Anybody who paid from July 1st, 2010 last year to up to this point for 12 months would be grandfathered in. That would take care of all those questions.
Oh, is there a consensus?
I would agree with that.
Okay, so just to kind of backtrack a little bit, is the question of grandfathering in or not, sounds like there is consensus to do that, but that's only for the 7 that have been identified. And I guess you're going to give us more details as to those who had paid as of last July 1 last year coming to.
If there are additional locations, we will advise you that there is additional locations that would be eligible for that.
Okay.
I'd be interested to know if those locations had been in violation or had complaints, if that's possible.
We can certainly research that. There is no rules to violate at this point in time, so there wouldn't be anybody that would be in violation.
Then,
but
if
there were
neighborhood complaints.
If there were complaints, we will research that.
Thank you.
If there were valid complaints, yes. So then I think the other discussion that we, or direction we want to give is, if someone was operating a vacation rental and it ceased operation, I think right now there's been talk about maybe two specific ways to do that. One of which is to identify they have up until a year for someone to come in and renew or start another business or another use consistent with what was there, or to do it indefinitely. And I think Councilmember Moner had talked about 6 months. And I think we've been having that kind of conversation about other non-conforming uses, reducing that year to 6 months. So that would be consistent with what we've been talking about citywide. So is there everyone okay with giving that direction to staff?
I think that makes sense.
Okay. And just to be clear, Mayor and council members, that would probably entail an amendment of a different code section in the code. If the council is contemplating reducing the abandonment of non-conforming uses from a period of 12 months to 6 months across the board, in other words, that will include all non-conforming uses.
Well, we had had that discussion, so I think what I'm demurely saying is that we've had that discussion on other throughout the city, and so I know that has not come forward yet, but you know, if we're heading in this direction, it's maybe something we'll consider.
Okay. Yeah, we did in just our recent workshop with Lisa Wise talked about changing some of our procedures, and I believe we specifically were talking about reducing the non-conforming to 6 months. So I think, you know, we could do something in here. It would be nice if it was uniform citywide.
Okay. And I think that's something we can discuss further when this is brought back to us for formal action. So I think there's some direction there, and obviously we'll talk about alternatives at that time too. Mayor Pro Tem.
If we decide to go with the six-month time frame, there will have to be a code change within the city, and will that delay this, or can we put it in this ordinance and then change the rest of it?
It would be my recommendation, especially since it is already in the process. And as I was not here at the last zoning workshop, but if that process is moving forward, I recommend that it stays with that process. In other words, we do not have specific times for non-conforming uses for other uses and other ordinances, but it's simply an across the board a year versus 6 months. So it would be my recommendation that this ordinance simply moves forward identifying the non-conforming uses, and that council take action on the zoning cleanup ordinance with regard to what does that mean.
Once you stop using it, you put it in the
umbrella, if you will.
So we go with the 12 months here now, but we also proceed with the code changes, and when that changes from 12 months to 6 months, then all would fall under the six-month category versus 12 months.
Is that what you said? That's not what I got.
That's what I heard. Right now, we're following. We don't specifically call
out. Yeah, we don't call out. That's what confused me. There is no 12 months being called out in here.
Yeah. No.
Currently, basically a non-conforming use, if it stops operating for under current city law, if it's abandoned for a 12-month period, it cannot be reinstated.
Right.
That period may later be decreased to 6 months with another council's action.
Okay. So that's good direction, and we will have more discussion and make it a decision when we have a formal action. There was a question of property management, and I believe staff's recommendation is that it not be required. Does anyone have any strong feelings one way or the other? I mean, I would say I would agree with staff. I think if we are going to require these uses to have a use permit, and we're going to have conditions that are going to be posted at the site, then we can then go forward if there's a violation, whether that is a corrective action or revocation. Then I think the onus not only goes with the property, but with the landowner.
I agree. I think, you know, just because they're a property manager doesn't mean they're going to do any better job than the property owner themselves. Okay. So yeah. I think I'm good with that.
As long as the, you know, there's someone to be notified if there's a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, because that's the purpose of a property manager.
Exactly.
So as long as there is someone that can be notified or called to say this is what's happening.
And that's part of the permit process. So.
Great. And then I think the last thing that I don't think staff had talked about it today, but I know that we had discussed the prospects of an ordinance is adopted, then a year later, let's bring it back and let's have a look, see and see how it's working, if we need to make adjustments and things
right.
of that nature.
And we did mention that staff report, and the point being is we weren't going to include that in an ordinance as a requirement. We were just pledging that we would come back after we've seen a year of operations and see what issues have come up, if any.
Well, we'll probably want to formalize that because some of us may not be here a year from the date of adoption. So, anyway, I think that is, staff, are you clear on the direction?
Yes, sir.
And can you just again restate a date for that you'll more than likely be bringing us back to the council?
I know the city manager is going to talk about schedule of council meetings. We were talking about a September meeting, so whether that be September 6th or 19th, it will be back to you in September.
Okay, so then there will be obviously adequate notice that will have to go out for everyone that is here. So,
yes.
Sounds good. Okay, I think that is good direction for staff, and we know that you all remain engaged, and we will see you in September. So thank you for coming out, and thank you for your comments. At this point, we're going to take a 10-minute break. Let's reconvene at 8:10, so about 12-minute break.
I need to run around.
Going to reconvene the city council meeting for Tuesday, July 5th, 2011, and when we last concluded, we had taken item number 9 out of order, and we put it before our consent agenda. So at this point, let's take consent, and I believe there are two items on consent. One is the treasury report for the period of June 16th through the 29th of 2011. And then the other is minutes from several meetings. One was May 24th, a special joint city council permanency meeting. One was a June 6th regular meeting, and the other was a June 6th joint city council Improvement Agency meeting. So consent is typically an agenda that we take routine items and as a group. And at this point, I'm if there's anyone from the public that would like to address any item on consent. Okay, seeing none. Do any members of the council want to pull any items from consent?
No.
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda items as submitted.
Okay, very good. Is there a second?
I second that.
Okay, there is a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, let's move back to our regular business, and this is item number six. This is CIP 386. This is authorization to award a contract for the Long Branch Avenue Demonstration Project. Public Works Director and City Engineer Ray.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor and City Council. On June 21st, the city received four bids for the subject project, ranging from $309,259.80 to $351,818.98. R. Simmons Construction Incorporated provided the low bid of just over $309,000. The proposed project consists of corner bulbouts and accessible ramps at the corners of Long Branch and 10th Street and Long Branch and 12th, with paving included between 10th and 14th, except, of course, in the areas that have already been recently paved. There's also opportunities to incorporate landscaping and low-impact development filtration techniques near 10th Street. In addition, a striped median will separate buses from the travel lanes and provide additional protection for the students at the school. I have copies of the plans with the improvements highlighted, as you can see on the overhead. I apologize, it's not the greatest exhibit, but we could muddle through it if you're looking to see a particular item on the set of plans here. And hang on, construction is expected to begin in late July and could be completed near the end of August. The work is likely to extend beyond the beginning of the new school year. With this in mind, the project has been modified to reduce the disruption to school operations to the extent possible. That includes allowing for longer working days, allowing Saturday as a work day in this case, and these are all done in an effort to just compress the project as much as possible. In addition, the project specifications do stipulate that the work near the school be completed first. So there's an order of work stipulation in the project. I might note that a protest to the proposed award was filed by another bidder, challenging the R. Simmons lowest bid on a couple of issues. I have evaluated the protest, and I am continue to recommend that the bid be awarded as proposed in tonight's staff report. Available funding for the project includes general funds in the amount of $91,000, water enterprise funds in the amount of $25,000, urban state highway account funds in the amount of $111,000, a Safe Routes to School state grant in the amount of $94,600, a community development block grant funds in the amount of $68,247, and then money that has been from numerous sources that was previously allocated to the local street maintenance program, CIP 283, in the amount of $185,000 and some change. The total funding available for the project is approximately $575,000. The proposed award, tonight's proposed award, includes award of bid alternates A and B, and that together extends the limits of work from South 10th Street to South 14th Street and Long Branch Avenue. The available funding will allow for a 15% contingency and amounts to approximately $46,000. That could be used to fund unexpected changes in the work requiring contract change orders. The recommended award amount will require City Council approval to use all of the CIP 283 funds, that's your local street rehab project funds, recommended in the mid-year budget adjustments for major street work in the 2012 fiscal year. And that includes use of $120,000 in general funds. That said, staff is recommending that Council 1 adopt the resolution to award the construction contract for CIP 386 to the lowest responsive bidder, which is R. Simmons Construction, in the amount of $309,259.80. 2, to authorize the city manager to sign and affirm change orders to the project in amounts up to $46,389 to be deducted from the contingency fund. And three, authorize the mayor to execute the contract on behalf of the city. We have provided some alternatives for council to consider. That includes awarding a reduced construction contract amount, possibly reducing bid alternates A or B, or possibly not awarding the project at all and providing additional direction to staff. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Greg. Any questions of staff?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, I guess I heard a no or yes there.
Yes, please.
Okay, well, Councilmember Warner.
A little confused here. So the you have two funds here, under fiscal impact and then under the on page 2 and page 3 is what I'm referring to. The funding you're showing on page, is this is what we have available for the project on page 2?
On page 2 shows the funding that's proposed in the current mid-year budget adjustment. That funding does not include CIP 283, which is a local street maintenance project, essentially. So the only difference between the two funding sources here would be the addition of CIP 283 funding.
Okay. So the bid and the cost you have at $360,700, let's say. And you're saying that we have available $575? Is that what that... I'm a little confused on this part.
Okay, that's a good question. I appreciate that. There is quite a bit more funding available than the project bid. First of all, we got a great bid. That's good news. But second of all, it's pointed out in the staff report that there are restrictions on the use of quite a bit of these funds. The CDBG funding, for example, has significant restrictions on its use, and it must be used, in this case, only for accessibility improvements. So to the extent we could, we included as many accessibility improvements within this project, but a portion of the CDBG funding is not available for use, essentially.
So this is the entire amount that's available from the CDBG, but we're not going to use all of this.
That okay. is correct.
So that is my main question is, what percentage of each of these we're going to use? Are we using 100% of the CIP 283 and portions of each of these?
And I apologize. I don't actually have a detailed breakdown of the exact amount of each. I know that we're using approximately half of the CDBG funds and most of the Safe Routes to School funding. You know, and if any of that funding is left over from either of those two sources, you know, we're gonna within the confines of those two grant funds, we'll come back with another project recommendation. Probably just some small sidewalk infill or something to that extent.
Okay. So then, what's left from the rest of these, like? Just out of curiosity, we're going to use up the USHA before we use the general funds? I mean,
absolutely.
Okay, so we're kind of going in order from bottom to top then?
Absolutely. And in terms of coding the project, if you choose to award the project tonight, in terms of coding invoices for the project, I would shy away from the general fund as my last option. Use it as the contingency funding or to perhaps fund the last components of the project. We would attempt to use the grant funding and USHA funding first.
So then that would leave excess money for other road projects?
Potentially, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. I'm just going to kind of continue on with that line. I too am a little confused. So we say it's going to be 185 from the local street rehabilitation funds, 185,000. But then it says 120. I thought I saw 120 somewhere. So am I off here? And to go on with that, just so to be clear, if we use that 185, that's every dollar that we would put towards our local street rehab.
That's correct.
Correct?
Yeah, okay. It's a good question. So the $120,000 figure, between this project and CIP 283, which is your local street mm-hmm. rehabilitation project, a total of $120,000 in general funds have been allocated. This project, I believe, had 30,000, let's see if I can find it here. I'm sorry, 91,000 originally, and the remainder was put into CIP 283. So we're proposing to make all of that available. You know, mm-hmm. when we wrote the staff, 50% of the work with his own forces. And the other was that one component of the bid was unweighted, which means that more emphasis was put on a particular item.
Okay. And you're comfortable with your determination?
I am.
Very good. That's it for me. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Can you give me some reasonable explanation in looking at the bid analysis? R. Simmons, under clearing and grubbing, they have allocated or put down the amount of $39,284, and Bro Construction has $10,000. I have trouble trying to figure out how one company can be that high on that particular item and another one be so low, and that's just one example of probably, if I had time, I'd go through all of this with you, 15 or 20 items of that nature. What is going on in that respect?
I can't say in particular. I mean, I obviously can't read the mind of the bidder, but there's a couple of potential reasons why it's higher. One is that, if they intend to do the work with their own forces, perhaps they thought it was going to be more expensive, or if they had a sub that was going to do that portion, perhaps that was more expensive than one of the other bidders. The other option is that because it is the first bid item and potentially the first pay item, a lot of contractors, in an effort to try to balance the project earlier, will lower the price of other items and add more money to the first item. In referring back to the bid protest, in particular, that is the item that generated one of the bid protests. Did I answer your question?
Not really, but that's okay. I can appreciate that. I might also comment that same item, clearing and grubbing, Rockwood General Construction, they had $8,378 versus $39,284. I don't understand how each company can do the same work at that difference in cost. That's just so far out that if I were administering this, I would really want to look at that and say, why am I going to pay one company $40,000 to do a job that this other company can do for $8,000?
And I appreciate that. That's an interesting way to look at it. The responsibility I think that maybe I have as the engineer on the project is to look at the total project and the likely outcome of the total project. In this case, if the project were reduced to just that one bid item, I'd clearly be standing for you tonight saying I don't recommend award to this company. Clearing and grubbing, though, is pretty well defined on the project, so I'm not concerned that we're going to be paying more on that item or more of for the total project as a result of that item being somehow different. In fact, you may even note that it's a final pay item. It's a lump sum final pay item on the project. So they're not really likely to get more money than they should for that project in the final outcome, or do you expect it to be approximately the same or even less? In this case, I actually expect the final outcome to be slightly less as a result of the unweighted bid item, even though the contractor is getting some slight monetary advantage for having it be the first item.
Okay. Still scares me a little bit. How is it that when we start talking about the overlay and the fog seal coat, items like that, the concrete and all those things that they're going to have to purchase, how can the prices differ so much? I mean, you have these contractors, they're pretty much buying from the same outfit, I would believe. There aren't that many companies that produce asphalt concrete for commercial use like this, and yet one item AC leveling course 112 ton is what they're going to get. The unit cost is $85 for Simmons and $101 for Bro Construction. That's a big difference when you're talking about purchasing 112 tons.
It is.
How can that difference, why can't Bro get the same cost as Simmons gets?
I would have no idea. I mean, I wish they could, you know. I mean, it would be great if all the bids were much closer. Clearly, the Bro Construction and R. Simmons bids were overall fairly close. I think, you know, what you see when the overall price, all these bids actually were relatively close in the scheme of things here. When you see a fairly tight range of prices, what you're typically seeing is they're all using the same subs, that they're, to some extent, they're using similar suppliers. But one may have an agreement with a supplier that another one just simply doesn't have. You know, they may have agreed to, you'll be my supplier for all projects, for example. So I'm not privy to those inside arrangements that they make in order to gain bids, but you know, that's how it works.
Well, it really concerned me because going back to that first item, $40,000 for one contractor and $10,000 for the other. And we have selected the contractor that's going to charge $40,000 for that item, and yet his bid is only $3,000 less than Bro Construction, the right company that's only going to charge us $10,000. So you got a $30,000 difference in one item, and yet there's only $3,000 difference at the bottom line.
Right.
Boggles my mind.
It's an interesting item, and I think you know, I did quite a bit of research in looking at this because it obviously that's the mm-hmm. whole reason for doing a bid analysis and looking at a standard deviation for a particular item. You look at items that jump out like that. I did quite a bit of research, and truly the litmus test is considering the overall project and whether or not the public or whether or not the engineer or the city expects to have to pay more for the overall project as a result of that item. And in this case, I just don't see it.
We've had experience with Bro Construction.
Yes,
if I'm not mistaken, they've done a number of projects for us.
And a great
and
job.
And I'm not that familiar with R. Simmons. Simmons or Simons?
Simmons.
Simmons. Can you give me some information on that, knowing that Bro has done some work for us? They've done a very good job, if I recall.
Show me how they will. And in fact, they provided sufficient information to show me how they will.
Okay. If you're satisfied, I am. That's all I have.
Okay.
I have another question, if that's
sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So how does payment occur when it talks about your lump sum? Never having dealt with this type of thing before, do they show receipts saying, yes, we're within this frame, or, you know, that something runs over more and this is less? I mean, how does payment work?
On a lump sum item in particular?
Yeah, on any of this, we just suddenly give them all the money. I mean, do they get something up front? Do they have to produce receipts showing that they actually paid this much for this particular, you know, line item?
No, this is a really good question. So we do contract management. We have inspectors in the field, and a combination between our field inspectors and myself, we administer the project. So we actually measure the amount of materials, and so there's a section in the contract specifications called measurement and payment, and it specifies for each item how it will be measured and on what basis it will be paid, and that's really what we do. I mean, hopefully, you know, either hopefully in house this time is what we're planning in order to save some money, but between myself and our public works superintendent, we have the skills to measure and evaluate the quantity and quality of the project and then to determine if they're due payment in accordance with their bid.
Okay, so if they say they have 44 tons, you make sure that they have 44 tons, right?
Absolutely, and if they have 36 tons, we pay 36 tons.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So, City Attorney, I just, Greg had talked about the protest and the process he'd gone through to just confirm or validate that R. Simon is going to be the primary contractor. Are you satisfied that the process that's been followed so far, or do you have are there any legal concerns with that?
At this point in time, there are no concerns. The city engineer has the discretion to evaluate a protest, and as Mr. Ray identified accurately, the measuring stick is what is in the best interest of the city, whether or not the award of this bid that is being protested would in some manner be to the detriment of the city. with regard to this bid. And he's done his homework. He's contacted both the protester and the potentially successful bidder, evaluated the information, and he's satisfied that awarding this bid is not going to create a financial hardship or a disadvantage to the city.
Okay.
And the next step is yours. You can either follow staff's recommendation or do something different. But under these circumstances, I don't have legal concerns. There are remedies that are available on both sides.
Very good. Because I will say I did have a concern with respect to the timing. And I'm going to just put this out, say this, because I know that last year we did not want to be doing a project in front of a school. And we took the funds from this project and put it on Grand Avenue and was able to do some spot improvements. So I think that was really good. So the fact that we're now bumping up against the start of school still leaves me with some concerns. I'll just the other thing I did want to remind all of us of is you had talked about this $120,000 from the general fund. That was the reduction from 240 to the 120 because of budget constraints. And so this project could have conceivably gone a little further, but because of budget constraints, we've now had to obviously reduce the scope of the project, and that's really unfortunate. I just wanted to make sure that we tied that to the reality. So that said, I know that this project does go a long way to meeting the intent of where the council was trying to go with this demonstration project. And really the intent was to look at ways to reduce the pavement width, which conversely hopefully would minimize cost to maintain the paving. Also, the idea was to try and create a much more pedestrian-friendly atmosphere, especially at the school. And then obviously pedestrian improvements as far as sidewalks. And so I'm glad we're going in that direction. I think we're still going to be able to meet that original intent. I know that in talking to Mr. Ray, there was a discussion where we were looking at in front of a school having a protected drop-off lane with concrete curbing, but we will not be able to do that because of limited resources. And so I think you're going to be able to paint that now. So I do want to ask the question of, the council approves this contract, we go forward with the bulb out that's shown here, or the opportunities for low impact development, and then the area that we have identified for drop off for parents and their children, which will only be striped now, if we were able to find resources and funds to do that, what is the process to amend? Would we amend this contract, or would we do something separately?
I believe you'd have the opportunity, if you chose to issue a contract change order. So you'd have an existing contract. You'd essentially be negotiating a contract change order. But there's a number of ways of doing that. And once we had a price in hand, either if you chose this evening, for example, we've identified an amount for typical contingency funding. But if you chose to up that amount in particular to address that issue of the pedestrian drop-off area, you could provide additional authority to the city manager to approve that change order if the price were deemed to be reasonable.
Okay.
Again, whether we'd come back to you, the council, at that point, or try to move within staff's authority, I think that would be.
Yeah, so the question would be, would the council at some point need to give you direction to move forward on that? Okay, because I think you're right. Having a little experience in looking at dealing with contracts, yeah, I think you're right that this has the potential to come in less as they do the work. And so, we keep running into the situation of if they haven't used the contingency and if there's money left over, how do we go to the next phase or segment without having to go back through this whole process again? And I think that's maybe a subsequent discussion and direction. But I would say all in all, after the questions that my colleagues have asked and that you've answered and the information you've provided with me,
the lowest responsive bidder are Simons Construction in the amount of $309,259.80, and also authorize the city manager to sign and affirm change orders to the project and amounts up to $46,389 to be deducted from the contingency. And third, authorize the mayor to execute the contract on behalf of the city.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, let's move on to item number 7, and this is the discussion and direction staff regarding the potential smoking regulations in public facilities in the city. And I believe I see... Oh, city attorney. Staff report, please.
Thank you.
Before, if I may, Mayor, before we get into this, may I ask a question? We were given a packet here prior to the meeting tonight, and it's with reference to this item. And that packet, I have briefly thumbed through it. There are 65 pages of information which are applicable to this item, this agenda item. And there is no way, in my opinion, that myself or any of my fellow council members are going to have an opportunity to review this material this evening prior to making any sort of a decision on this item. So I'm not sure, but what maybe we ought to consider putting this item over to the next meeting so that we have an ample opportunity to review this material if it, in fact, is that significant and important to our making a decision on this item.
Okay. Staff would be prepared to present at the next meeting. What I would point out to the council, perhaps, since there is a guest here who probably would like to address the council on this issue, maybe even without taking a staff report, if she is not able to come back at the next meeting, perhaps take her information.
Well, I understand, and I'm just trying to decide if we need to have maybe just a brief staff report because there are folks who are not here who are watching at home. So maybe just a brief, a truncated report, and then you're right, I want to open this up to the public. We'll continue with the public hearing.
Open. Thank you. Honorable Mayor, Council members, very briefly then, I think the item originated through Council's direction with some concerns regarding smoking in park and other city facilities. When the item was brought to you for further discussion, four questions basically were raised for us to bring back and respond to. These questions were further detail on smoking restrictions for public facilities, whether the term residential care facilities were considered health facilities, and to clarify the term health facilities, description of what enforcement action we've taken to restrict smoking if local regulations were enacted, cost estimates, and then private property rights with relationship to smoking. The staff report responds to these items. Basically, the healthcare facilities or long-term healthcare facilities are defined in state law. I think getting to the cutting to the chase, if you would, the council does have the ability. Code enforcement operates on complaint basis. That's the method by which the city has been enforcing its code. So as violations are brought to city's attention, they are investigated and violators are noticed of the violations. Fine are issued if this is a item that is subject to fines, or legal action is brought to obtain compliance. So it's a standard enforcement mechanism that city has used in other code enforcement situations. The cost of that are difficult to estimate. That would obviously depend on the level of involvement that the council chose to take in this type of arena. Obviously, the more the wider spread the regulations of smoking into healthcare facilities, into potentially other common areas of some facilities, the greater the cost of enforcement, because there's a greater likelihood of complaints. With regard to whether or not private areas, the council should or can enact ordinances or regulations that deal with private areas. Generally speaking, obviously in single-family residential homes, that is, I would not recommend moving in that direction. There are some instances, certain jurisdictions that have enacted ordinances that deal with common areas in multifamily dwelling settings, usually in the large apartment buildings, right, condominium buildings, to avoid smoke in the hallways, avoid smoke in the common areas. I think there is one, Sebastopol, if I'm not mistaken, one entity that ventured further and has adopted an ordinance that controls smoke inside a multi, even in, within the actual apartments of a multifamily residence. That has not been tested. Whether or not that's a direction that you wish to pursue, if you do, we'll do further research and bring you back some more specific answers. That's as brief as I can be. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. If you wish to continue, obviously, we'll be here to provide further information. If you wish to separate these items and move the public, the parks issue to the Parks and Rec Commission and retain the other issues here, that's also an option that's available. With that, I'll answer any questions.
A very good staff report. So hold on, let me let someone else start. You have any questions to my right?
No.
Actually, I do.
Okay.
I called up the Department of Social Services under the community care licensing because at one point in my life I had a child care facility. And I asked them, and they said a residential care facility is licensed by the state and as such is affected by state law. And I do believe that it says that you cannot have smoking within 20 feet of any door or window that leads into the facility. And so that I had brought that up last time, and I decided to check on that. And since they are state licensed, they are subject to state law on smoking. And I think, so I don't understand the confusion here as to with the long-term health care, the smoking ordinance, that we need to include that because it already is state mandated.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
Okay. So I think the Mayor Pro Tem had brought up a concern about information that we've received that we would like to have more information, more time to read and review. And so I think you were thinking of maybe continuing this to July 18th meeting?
That would be my recommendation, yes.
Okay, so what I'm going to do then is actually there have been folks who've been here waiting patiently all night, so I am going to open this up to the public and allow members of the public to come and provide testimony or ask questions, and then we'll take up your suggestion and we'll go from there. So let me open this up to the public, and please come forward, state your name and city of residence for the record.
Good evening, Mayor Schultz and Council. My name is Christine Lefebvre, and I'm a health education specialist with the County Public Health Department Tobacco Control Program. We know that secondhand smoke ordinances have been passed to protect people from tobacco in outdoor areas such as parks, sports fields, outdoor dining, and festivals. But now communities are choosing to surpass even that. I'm moving past those limited policies and are now passing ordinances that are far more comprehensive in scope, many of which include prohibition of smoking in multi-unit housing, in not just in common areas, but also prohibit smoking in apartments and in healthcare facilities. We know that the staff report, in all due respect, it suggests that it's not possible to do it in healthcare facilities, but what we know is that local law can trump that state law, and there have been places such as Belmont that have done it. We also know that there are 12 or jurisdictions that have done some sort of a multi-unit housing ordinance, and one of the items that I think I had given you suggesting, I just was thumbing through very quickly, and I saw at least three just in the first couple of pages that have prohibited smoking in apartment complexes. So it is legal and possible. So I just wanted to give you a couple of some information on how the public supports these policies. In 2009, we completed a survey at the Stone Soup Music Fair and found that 93% of respondents agreed that secondhand smoke outdoors is harmful. They also agreed that 84% that there should be policies for outdoor areas that ban tobacco, and 86% of people agreed that a person's right to breathe clean air free from toxins is more important than the right of someone to smoke. Additionally, we've surveyed close to 400 residents in San Luis Obispo County about their feelings regarding opportunities for smoke-free multi-unit housing, as we've discussed here, and found that 78% believe that secondhand smoke can drift in an apartment from an apartment inside an apartment into another apartment, and 87% believe that secondhand smoke can drift from outside an apartment into an apartment. The majority of our participants, 76%, supported prohibiting smoking inside apartments. A comprehensive ordinance for Grover Beach that included public areas such as recreational spaces, workplaces like outdoor dining, and multi-unit housing, to name a few, would go far to reduce exposure to secondhand smoke and tobacco litter, as and ultimately save lives. It would give Grover Beach the opportunity to do more than just catch up to other cities in the area, but help it be a leader in protecting its citizens. So we hope you'll consider this. And I am available to come back.
I want to thank you for considering this ordinance. We're here to support you, and if you have any questions, please let us know. Thanks.
Great, thank you.
Hi, my name is Cameron Schneider. I live at 1472 9th Street, Los Osos, California. I'm here for two reasons. First of all is that while I don't live in Grover Beach directly, I do live in a small coastal town, and while San Luis Obispo, the city, he has a lot of flagship laws, I guess you could say, they get passed. A lot of the smaller towns do not. And I'm wanting to hopefully have Grover Beach create a precedent to let smoke-free public areas for other areas in the county happen. And secondly, as someone who lives on the coast, I am also a fan of biology. And I know that for the region that we live in, known as the chaparral region of the ecology, there are three main plants that grow, the black sage, the coastal sage scrub, and the manzanita, all of which have evolved to encourage wildfires. That's why there's so many wildfires in the Los Angeles and San Diego areas. While obviously most of Grover Beach doesn't have these plants in abundance, there are public areas and multi-unit housing that are on the fringes of Grover Beach. And if only 1% of the Grover Beach's population smoked, which is at 14,780 citizens, I believe, at one pack a day, which is the average a smoker smokes, that'd be 29,560 cigarettes that are being lit every day, and only one would take to create a fire. That would not only risk the residents, but also the tourist economy that Grover Beach has, as well as in Los Osos. And so that's why I'm here to encourage the city of Grover Beach to enact these smoking regulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Cameron. So was there anyone else? Okay. So I'm going to leave this open and bring it back to the council and Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
I would like to do some more studying on this. I certainly appreciate the comments that we've had from the public. I appreciate their coming here and making their comments. I'm very much in favor of an ordinance, but I think we need to do it right. And it appears to me there's a considerable amount of information that we need to look at. The only other suggestion I would make is if we want to refer this to Parks and Recreation for their input at the same time that we do some additional studies on our own to bring this back to the council at a future date.
Okay.
I'm all right with that. Actually, there has been some information that came from the public that I wasn't aware of. I wouldn't mind having a little more time to look into that a bit more. I think it would make for a much better ordinance if we're more information we have.
Okay, so rather than, I think you're saying there's two options here. One is certainly what staff is recommending that
probably seek their input on.
Okay, so and then the other option is just to continue this to the July 18th meeting. Give us some time to review this information and any other information that has come, and then come back, get a more thorough staff report, give staff some direction, and at that time we can still refer it back to the Park and Recs and Beautification Commission.
I have a question then.
Yes.
So at the July 18th meeting, it wouldn't be completely decided then, because you would.
That's correct.
Since I'm not going to be here, I'm on vacation. I would prefer that we don't, you know, vote on this completely without.
looks like you're going to be skipping vacation.
It's paid for.
Well, my thought was that if we're going to get any input from Parks and Recreation insofar as that aspect of it is concerned, that we could do that at the same time. That was what I was trying to suggest.
Well, I'll tell you what, someone make a motion. We'll see where this goes. I'm not going to tell you how to make the motion, so.
Okay, I will move that we table this item until a future meeting. And if you want a date certain, or can we just say until?
I think a date certain would help, so we don't have to go back and do more notifications.
Right, and we would simply continue that to a date certain. And if it is the intent of the motion maker to send this to the Parks and Rec for that aspect of it, I would suggest that we bring this back to the City Council in August, second meeting in August.
City Manager, do we have any big items on the...
No. That's right. I'm sorry. We'll make that the second meeting in September.
Second meeting in September, if possible. It is ultimately up to the council, but I want to make sure that what we do is make sure that we get it properly scheduled, if that's your intent, with Park and Rec, so that you can get a report back from them. That'll probably take at least in August before we can get it scheduled for the Park and Rec. Okay.
See, not that you were going to tell me the Beachfront Lodge was going to be on that hearing date. So, okay.
Okay. So let's continue this to...
Go ahead and make your motion.
Till second meeting in September. And in the interim, request the staff forward this on to Parks and Recreation for their input insofar as Parks and Recreation facilities are concerned.
Donna, what is the date?
That would be the 19th of September.
Okay. I think we're okay because the League of California Cities is later that week. Okay. Okay, so there's a motion. Is there a second?
I second it.
Okay. So I've kept the public hearing open. Is that just something?
This was a regular business item.
Yeah, that was. Well,
so there was not a problem.
So, okay. So there is a motion and a second. If there's no...
From the City of Royal Grande. The letter is requesting a response to an invitation by the City of Council of the City of Arroyo Grande to a joint meeting to discuss law enforcement consolidation. In order to assist the Council in discussion on this item, I have attached a copy of the staff report that the Arroyo Grande City Council considered at the time that they decided to forward their request. I've also included the minutes from that particular meeting. It should be pointed out that in the past we've worked cooperatively. It took us about 4 years with some success to gain the consolidation of fire services. There has been, and I want to emphasize this, no discussion at the council level regarding law enforcement consolidation other than the discussion regarding dispatch. The purpose of tonight's meeting is to provide staff with direction in how to respond to this letter. First of all, I think you would want to indicate whether, in fact, you're interested in meeting with the City of Arroyo Grande on this matter. And what you would most likely want to do is, in responding, is indicate any concerns or matters of interest that the council has relative to this particular item. And then finally, I would be looking for at least if you do intend to respond positively, a list of potential dates that you might be willing to meet. That concludes staff's report.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Questions of staff?
Yeah, let me ask a question. In looking right off the bat, the letter from the city of Arroyo Grande, dated May the 18th, it states that at the request of the City Council of Arroyo Grande Police Department, staff has prepared an analysis of the potential savings from providing contract police services to the city of Grover Beach. I thought we had made it quite clear some time ago that we were not interested in contracting police services to Arroyo Grande or any other community. And then they go on to say that this study concluded that consolidation of police services. So they're talking about two different things. We would have expressed an interest, if I recall, on this council of consolidating police services. We have never asked for, nor do it is my understanding, have we intended to contract our police services to the city of Arroyo Grande. So I think we need to understand if they are interested in Grover Beach contracting our police services to them, I think we can just send them a letter right now and tell them no, that we're not interested at all. If they wish to discuss consolidation of police services, that's something that we might very well be interested in. That's kind of my thoughts.
Okay.
I thought that was a question. Sorry about that.
Well, it's a business item. I don't need to open this to the public, so let's questions, comments. And I think, I don't know if this needs to be in a letter or if it needs to be a call from our city manager there to theirs, is to, one, clarify their intentions. Are their intentions truly consolidation, or is it contract services? Because I think there is a little confusion because they're exchanging the two words. I think the other thing is, what I'm hearing is that we need to be saying that I think there's interest, but in order for us really to feel it would be a productive meeting, that all options would need to be on the table. That's full consolidation. And I just to kind of emphasize that, it's a little troublesome that the police chief in Arroyo has claimed that there will be these savings. And those numbers were probably done based on consolidation rather than contractor services. So I think that's going to be part of the clarification. And I know that information has been out there, and I've taken issue with it, to be clear. And then I think the third thing we really want to emphasize is that we still believe that consolidation of whether it's fire or whether it's dispatch remains the priority. This is kind of where this all started. So I think we need to do that first and then clarify their intentions, and if they are willing to say all options are on the table and it's a sincere response, then I think I would hope that we would say yes, then maybe it makes sense to have that conversation with the understanding that we've gone through this with fire and the length of time it took to get through that process, and it's not a simple process, so it does take time.
Mr. Mayor, if I could suggest, actually, what if the council endorses this approach, there's a lot of policy language that just went into those statements, and I would be more comfortable delivering that in written form.
That's fine if that's what you're comfortable with. So then I think it's so then I it looks like the letter came from the city manager, and it looks like the letter would more than likely need to come from you in response to his request. But I think we're pretty clear that even though I set all options on the table, that I think there's a consensus up here that Grover Beach has no intention of looking for contract services, which would in effect mean that we would have to start eliminating positions and starting at the very top. And I don't think anyone on the council has said that we are willing to do that. And I see the big guy in the audience tonight. So,
and also, it sounds like this is a kind of an attempt at a quick fix at a budget problem. That's what seems to me that's suggested in this letter. And you can't do quick fix when it comes to this. It's going to take a while. So I don't know if we even need to bother setting a date until you write a letter saying our, you know, giving our stand.
I would agree.
Wait for a response.
I think that's exactly right. So we don't need to set a date to think we want to send a letter to and cover the points that I had mentioned. So you clear on that, Bob?
Yes.
Okay. We're in agreement, everyone?
Yes.
Consensus?
Yes.
Okay.
Brian Brennan, who's a council member of the city of Ventura, has now been named to the Coastal mm-hmm. Commission. And he said, should we have any projects that we would like to discuss with him directly, for me just to let him know.
Hmm. Did you get his number?
Sure.
Great.
So
we'll be calling.
Anyway, the air pollution control is in good hands.
Okay. So I do have a question of Mayor Pro Tem regarding the South Slo County Sanitation District. On the grand jury report that has been referred to this evening, is the board going to respond to that? And I don't know if we had gotten a copy of that at all. Bob, do you recall?
I don't think it's been distributed to the council. I'd have to go back and see if we've in fact received it.
Okay.
I know it was in my packet.
Oh, it was?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I mean, as the alternate.
Oh.
So it's up there.
Okay.
All right, report is due August 2nd. It's in the process of being prepared right now.
Okay, and then there will be a formal response to?
That's due to the judge by August 2nd.
Oh, that is due. Okay.
Yes. And it's in the process right now.
Okay.
What about the voice concerns based upon the members of the board, you know, Bailey one and Ferrara is the other one, about the concern that there is not enough information coming out and looking into the conflicts of interest and as board members, you know, are you, since I am don't know that information about it, I mean, what about those accusations? I mean,
what is your question?
My question is there enough transparency? Are we getting all the information that we need to know about based upon these allegations and the problems that have occurred with the sanitation district and the fact that there is a possible conflict of interest with the Wallace Group being in charge of absolutely everything?
Okay, there has been allegations of a conflict of interest for a long time. There has nobody come forward with any specific information that, in fact, a conflict exists. Everybody talks about the conflict of interest. The grand jury talked about the conflict of interest. There is no conflict of interest that anybody has actually brought forth. There's a perception of a conflict of interest. That is being handled in the report to the grand jury. The other matters that have been discussed generally refer to personnel issues that we are not at liberty to discuss. And I have mentioned to you that one of the personnel issues has been resolved in that the judge granted a demur without leave to amend as to her allegations against the sanitation district.
Okay. Is there any oversight group then that looks at Wallace? I mean, since they seem to be the chief cook and bottle washer there. I mean, is that part of the board's?
Absolutely part of the board's responsibility and duty.
Do you have a yearly review of them to make sure that they are performing according to how they should perform?
Snight?
Yeah.
Okay. Nope. City manager, looks like you've got reports and some comments.
Well, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, it was important, I thought, to at least update the council and, if you will, the agency board as to impact of the state budget and especially on redevelopment and how that will, in turn, impact our budget. Obviously, those final decisions were made late in the week, so it precluded for me from doing any detailed staff report. But I wanted the opportunity to be able to update you as soon as possible. As I'm sure you're all aware by now, the state budget was signed last week. And most significantly, as far as the city's redevelopment agency was concerned, AB1X26 and AB1X27, which were trailer bills to the budget, were actually signed last Wednesday afternoon. The immediate impact for the city is that as of the signing, eliminated the redevelopment agency from incurring any additional indebtedness. As the council is aware, we were in the process of completing a bond issue. That bond issue was scheduled to close, believe it or not, Wednesday evening. And unfortunately, the signature occurred immediately before we were able to close the bond issue. So for the time being, we have been unsuccessful in completing the process obtain loan bond proceeds, repay the let debt or the loans between the agency and the city. Beyond that, and we'll have some options relative to that I'll go over in a second. But the other obviously important thing, as I've mentioned, is that those trailer bills essentially eliminated, as I've mentioned, the agency's ability, at least for an interim period, to actually enter into any new agreements. At least that's what my understanding is, and take on any new obligations. The second part of this was AB 27, which says that it offered agencies the opportunity to actually continue if they by ordinance determine and decide that to pay a significant amount of money into the school's education relief and augmentation fund. For us, that's the basic rule, the way it's affected all agencies. For us, that payment would be somewhere between roughly $350,000 and $380,000. Also, AB 27, essentially the agency would begin a phase-out period that will extend over several months. Obviously, there is a lot that needs to yet be determined here relative to the specifics of the legislation. We're just learning about it now as to actually what some of the specific requirements are. I can tell you that the CRA, as well as that's the Community Redevelopment Association, as well as the League of California Cities, will probably file suit. That suit will probably be filed within the next couple of weeks, is what my understanding is. And what they'll be doing is obviously they'll seek to stay the implementation of the law until such a time as the court ultimately rules on its constitutionality. The timing on the lawsuit in terms of getting a final answer could be a long time. I mean, it's hard to predict. What we'll probably hear first is the determination by the court on whether there is to be a stay and how that stay will affect our operations. The long side of this, though, one of the items that we will be presenting is a more detailed analysis of all of this, probably at the next meeting. And part of what we'll be asking the council to consider is whether or not the council wishes to at least begin the process to continue the agency. initially, I know how, at least from a staff perspective, all of this is extremely distasteful. But the other point of this is the council will need to consider what the ramifications are. Obviously, we expect that the lodge is going to move forward. We expect that there'll be other development in the project area. If the agency's not in place, we certainly won't have the advantage of taking any of that, assisting with any of that increment flowing in. There also is a possibility that we could, once the council determined to continue, we could take a look at reissuing those bonds. The bonds would a lot of work's been done. The financing team is still in place, and the advantage to that is that it would still provide some protection for future increment to pay those proceeds, and we would in turn be able to still potentially pay those loans and use those repaid dollars back to do public projects, which was the intent all along. It's unclear right now what the lawsuit would do with all of that completed and are just putting to good use. We wouldn't be able to do those things in the future. So I know this is ultimately not the best news to try and portray. It'll also have budget impacts that we'll need to consider as we look at our budget revisions, which will be back for at least discussion purposes at the next meeting. So, you know, the purpose of this message is just to provide you with an update to more or less answer any questions. The city attorney has certainly been following this issue as well to answer any questions that you may have. And, you know, we'll just continue to follow this as it works itself out. But it certainly was a very disappointing conclusion thus far.
So Bob, long story short, we were looking at a bond issue, trying to generate revenues or resources mm-hmm. to do more public improvements. A lot of that was looking at trying to help the lodge forward as well as the municipal network project.
Right. Those were some of the projects that were included on the list that were forwarded to the part of the bond program.
So the bottom line is that we can't close this bond issue unless we choose to participate in this distasteful and illegal practice. Okay. And I did get word from the league today that said don't write any checks yet because they expect to file suit within the week. So I guess that's something we'll have to discuss. Do we know if we were allowed to use residential set-aside dollars to pay this extortion fee that associated with AB 27?
We doubt it, but we're reviewing that option.
Because the last time they took money from redevelopment, they said we could use residential set-aside funds, even though they say it's illegal, but then they said you have to pay them back.
There is a bill, that cleanup bill that is being That's proposed right. That would permit use of those funds for that payment, or at least that is what is being rumored, I guess, for lack of a better word. But as it currently stands, that funds are not available to make that payment. One other option that ought to be, at least for the time being, left with you before you deliberate this item potentially at the next meeting is that irrespective of the lawsuit or even a potential order to stay the current legislation, if it is the council's intent to move forward with the issuance of the bonds, it will most likely require you to at minimum adopt the ordinance and lodge that money potentially in a trust account if it's before the issuance of the bonds. Because in order to get a bond council's opinion that these bonds are legal and without any clouds on them, waiting for an opinion of a Supreme Court one way or the other on the constitutionality of this, no matter how convinced we are that it'll be thumbs up, would preclude bond council
redevelopment.
Well, there are,
I mean, do we bring in enough?
There are a couple. One, and, you know, I am not in a position to make a recommendation one way or the other at this point, but there are a couple. One is obviously to the degree, it still would be the same program, to the degree that you have bonded indebtedness that is now recognized because you've continued with the agency, you would be able to keep that increment to pay that debt service locally on those bond proceeds. Those bond proceeds could then be in turn used to do some of those public projects not that we've talked about, and not losing sight of that. So that's a benefit to going along with continuing the agency. The other benefit is, as we've mentioned, is that at least by having the agency in place, it allows you to capture whatever kind of increment will come as a result of future development within the area. If you don't have that available to you, the agency isn't there, then those dollars will get reallocated.
So currently, what kind of revenue have we seen from this?
Well, first of all, you need to know that when outside of the redevelopment area or the actual percentage of the taxes the city gets to retain is 17 cents on the dollar for every property tax dollar collected. In a redevelopment agency, which works on an overlay for the taxes that result from incremental growth in value within the project area, you get to keep somewhere between 45 and 60 cents on the tax dollar. So it's considerably more. That's what the benefit is from a dollar point of view. And then the other point of view is you get to do things that economic development projects that you are precluded from using the general fund for in a lot of ways.
Okay, but historically, let's say, I mean, we don't have it in front of us, but what did we bring in last fiscal year?
Well, it's right about $1.1 million is what the city realizes.
Okay, so we'd be paying, what, about 40% of that back out? I mean.
Yeah, that's about, that's a one-time payment.
Right. So.
And then the annual obligation would be about $80,000.
Okay, so right. So it's an initial blood money of that, and right. Then after that, it's
$80,000 a year.
And that doesn't include the 20% set aside, so we actually
correct.
Have even less to put on economic development.
That's correct.
So.
Okay. And then is there any chance that can't change that amount, can it? Can they send it to say, no, you have to pay more than
$80,000? Oh, they can do that. Absolutely. They're the state. Come on.
Okay. So then what happens if we decide to go ahead? I mean, hypothetically speaking, decide to go ahead and accept paying the money to stay in the game, and then they find out that this whole thing was unconstitutional anyway for the California state constitution, right? Then what happens at that point? Do we get our money back?
You won't get any money back,
no.
So.
That's why we're not going to pay it until we
if,
actually
if and when the time comes that... Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, there's benefits to being new to the council. and I say that because those are all great questions, and we've been down that road, and we know that once the state gets their hand on money, whether legal or illegal, there's nothing to compel them to pay it back. And so we negotiate from a position of non-leverage. But that said, you're going to be coming back to us with a full discussion
yes.
and identify what our options are. And obviously, it's going to be very important that we find a way to make this lodge project happen, because I think the worst case scenario is we maintain an improvement agency area and then we don't start seeing improvements of a substantial
right.
amount. Then you kind of wonder what was really the benefit, the long-term benefit for keeping this going. So.
Oh, yeah, because you can, like, amortize that over a certain
mm-hmm.
number of years and say, okay, it was worth doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway.
Okay.
Thanks for wrapping up a nice evening, Bob.
Well, we can talk about the LVF and the.
There you go. Okay, City Attorney, any reports or comments? Can you cover the closed sessions we have this evening?
Certainly. The council intends to meet on two items in closed session. One is conference with labor negotiations on all employee groups. The other one is public employee evaluation with the position of city manager being evaluated.
Very good. And with that, we're going to recess in the closed session.